If Reality Check Radio enriches your day in life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and the dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Guess who's next on the show? Shane Jones. He's back. I've managed to catch him between meetings. Let's see what he has to say about last week in the House, recent developments on the Waitangi Tribunal, and his green mannequins. Shane's on the line from Nelson now, so let's get chatting. Welcome back to The Crunch, Shane Jones. It's good to have you back on, and we're back on air. This is the second week we're back on air, and good to have you back for our normal catch-up.
No, pleasure to be here from sunny Nelson in the South Island, where I'm meeting and trading ideas with the various interests that comprise aquaculture and fishing in what is arguably fishing capital.
Well, you've been hammering a few of the green wombles in Parliament about precisely this sort of thing, using our natural resources that God gave us to enrich the country in general rather than what they prescribe, which is misery and poverty.
Yeah, okay. I have deployed some colourful language, dismissing them as munchkins and suggesting that they're more their economics is more related to unicorn kissing than the harsh reality of how you dig the country out of the rut that we're in. But if it has the effect of displaying to the public that there is a new regime, that we have different priorities, and we're not going to acquiesce with this shapeless, formless rhetoric that's got actually no content and offers no practical hope for the Kiwis who on a regular basis are packing up and buggering off to Aussie.
Well, that's the thing. The economy in Australia, even though it's faltering like many of the economies around the world, the opportunities there seem to be a lot more available to anybody, and along with easily accessible things like housing and infrastructure and all the rest of it that goes with it. It's almost like we've beggared ourselves as a nation and then seem to be screaming that we can do better by taxing ourselves more.
Well, look, housing in some parts of Australia is extraordinarily affordable. I've got quite a lot of whānau up there. Indeed, one of my mokopuna, she's back, she's a 10-year-old, back for a few days, and the quality of life that her and her her family are enjoying over there is unlikely to cause them to want to come back home anytime soon. The most important thing, however, is we've tied ourselves up in a system of resource management and environmental management that's dominated by a caste of Brahmins. Mm. And once we break their hold and get more pragmatic and practical people and decision makers involved, then we're going to be able to free up land to reduce the cost of sections, reduce the cost of housing provision. But at the moment, even when you get a consent for a big project in New Zealand, it's often saddled with so many conditions, whether it's a wind farm, a minerals play, a development, an aqua farm, and of course, politicians no longer make these decisions. We delegate them, by and large, down to these grandees on these committees who are never held accountable. Look, I say this to you. Mm. The Ruatanifa Dam collapsed on the basis of one decision maker in the Supreme Court.
Yep.
Now, I recall Bill English venting his spleen when that decision came out somewhere around the 2017 election. One decision maker in the Supreme Court. So who's got the greater moral authority or legitimacy? One single jurist or an entire array of personalities that have been out and tested their fitness in the front of the gaze of their fellow New Zealanders? That's why I'm such an enthusiast for maintaining ministerial oversight as to the fast-track process. But I have to admit, it is before the Select Committee, and who knows how that may change. But if people ever doubt, well, why is Shane so hard-line on maintaining ministerial oversight? Look no further than some of the decisions, including three unelected, unknown, obscure, ill-suited people turning down the offshore fishing initiative of Ngaitahu down in Southland, what that was supported by every single Southlander who had an inclination to pay attention. Pretty straightforward, mate.
But we're seeing these grandees in these positions almost trying to write law without bothering to stand for Parliament. And we saw that on Monday afternoon when the Court of Appeal decided that they knew better and that it is okay for the Waikatangi Tribunal, of which there is not a single judge sitting on it, to be able to call ministers at their whim to harangue them about public policy that voters voted for.
Yeah, I think it's a deep constitutional issue. MMP is always going to throw up a host of policy outcomes that we campaigned on as minor parties, and it's almost as if the established order, which has been agreed to by the cast of lawyers and various other stakeholders who attend these hearings at the Waitangi Tribunal, they are offended by the ideas we're bringing. Well, we campaign on having a review and resetting the writ of the Waitangi Tribunal. Whether people like it or not, I went with my leader to drafty halls and the nooks and crannies of what passes for the entire electorate in New Zealand. We're also going to change the law, which unfortunately has enabled the Court of Appeal to expand the writ and expand the purpose of the seabed and foreshore legislation. And we campaigned on addressing which of these ongoing Treaty of Waitangi principle statements in law ought to remain. Now, I know that all of that is offensive to the caste of Brahmins who seek to order our constitutional direction of travel. Well, no, sorry. We stood for office. That's what we were elected to do. And admittedly, it is taking a tad longer than I would have liked, but that's what we're going to deliver on. And I know it's controversial, but at the end of the day, Parliament is sovereign. And if you want to go to Parliament, stand for office.
Well, we've got some, you know, a commentator out there. I mean, I call all of these lawyers and people that sit there and going to the tribunal on everything that they can dream up with kind of troughers. You know, they're sort of trotted deep in the trough. Christopher Finlayson was one of those who is a poacher turned gamekeeper and then gone back to being a poacher again. And he's out there, you know, back-chatting anything that you or Winston says, basically trying to say that you're anti-democratic and against Maori, while he's got his trotters in the trough himself.
Well, what we're going to do is we're working effectively with our coalition partners, and we don't underestimate the size of the task. But Winston's had a long period of time where he has railed against this creep of judicial activism and quite frankly, mission creep at the Waitangi Tribunal. And now I know when I carry on, I annoy some of my relations there at the tribunal, but legitimate authority has to be, at the end of the day, tested by the will of the people. And I don't care if that sounds trite, but that's how the system works. And that's why we really have to address what is the role going forward in the next 50 years of the Waitangi Tribunal? In what manner or form should it exist? And who empowered it to be something akin to the House of Lords, fulfilling a role almost like rejecting or putting our policy outcomes created through a democratic process through a cultural kind of decolonization sieve.
Is there any need for the tribunal? I mean, we're just about settled everything as far as you can settle anything in Māoridom. There's only really Ngāpuhi left as major settlements. Everything else is dreamed up since the settlements. Like this necessity or requirement of the tribunal to question a minister over government policy. These are dreamed up, imagined grievances as opposed to real grievances, which is what it was originally set up to deal with.
Yeah, only the Ngāpuhi claim remains outstanding, and we're going to have to get focused along with Goldie and bring that to heel. Sadly, it's blighted by the decision of the Waitangi Tribunal which basically agreed that the Ngāpuhi people didn't cede sovereignty. What on earth that's got to do with the daily travails of Rangi and Hine Moa living in Whangarei, Kaikohe, Paihia is beyond me, but there you go. We're going to have to deal with that. But look, a review of the tribunal has to take an expansive approach and pair it back to what role represents value. But I'm deeply disturbed by the notion that everything we campaign on, which will offend some people, I mean, the fact of the matter is a lot of the green policy that they campaigned on around trans rights, etc., it offended me. But I would be prepared to tolerate the fact, well, that's democracy. You win some, you lose some, rather than trot off to the Waitangi Tribunal and haul one day possibly even me up. In fact, I pray for the day that they seek to subpoena me to the Waitangi Tribunal. Well, anyway, mate, I can see people gathering around outside to talk to the Minister of Fisheries. I better sort of start to move on. But if there's anything else that we want to urgently cordial about, let's do it, and then I've got to go.
Well, we'll just do it in another time, Shane. It's always a pleasure having you on The Crunch, and I know you're a busy man, but I appreciate your time talking to us and to our listeners. You always have something interesting to say.
Kia ora. Thank you very much. Bye,
thank
folks.
You. Bye. My word, the producers are going to be creating quite a few shareables out of that 10 minutes or so. What do you reckon? Let me know your thoughts by emailing inbox@realitycheck.radio or text to 2057.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.